when it's not. It's not an interview. It's not someone holding a camera and then the other person, and then asking questions and getting prompting from someone, right? It's not the kind of mainstream media sort of idea. It's also not necessarily spontaneous. There is a process of preparation before the digital story is developed. You might develop a script, for instance. You might think about what story you'd like to tell and have a process of thinking that through, the consequences of telling and so on. It is always with informed consent. And you have to think about the use of the stories as well. Making the stories is one thing, but thinking about what you'd like to do with them is a whole other discussion that you need to have with the storytellers, with your organization. It's about your intentions, your objectives, and it needs to be carefully thought through. It's also not slick. A lot of the digital stories have little odd blips in there. The sound isn't great. We've recorded digital stories under tables, in cupboards. We don't have the slickest equipment. We don't have soundproof rooms. So they're often a little kind of dodgy in that respect. But we overlook that stuff. Okay, so I wanted to for you to read this quote about the myth of the one story. You can't tell a single story of any person or people. There are many stories that create us. The single story creates stereotypes. There are other stories that are just as important to tell. The problem with stereotypes is not that they are untrue, but that they are incomplete. All the digital stories that we've done about domestic violence, about sexual assault, about anything, are weaved together to create a contribution to our thinking around whatever issue we are focusing on. It's not the truth. And we often get asked when we do digital stories, is that the truth about domestic violence? No, it's one person's truth. And it is her truth, and it's a relevant truth. But there are lots of different stories to be told. And of course there are difficulties around perspective and figuring things out, but that's the value of telling a story in a group of people who can then discuss and find their own relevance in that story. I wanted to talk about the witness, which in this case will be you today. You'll be witnessing stories. And the storyteller. It's not easy to listen carefully to someone else. It's not easy to hear other people above the clamor for our attention from media, from cell phones, from your work, from your own head, from everything that informs your experience. It's not easy to listen about mainstream media tragedy porn. I don't know whether you've heard of the term tragedy porn, but it's kind of when the media go mad about a certain issue. So say 9/11, the photographs of people falling from buildings and of dusty people with blood moving through streets. It seems like sometimes there is this kind of abundance of voyeurism and without any kind of meaning or notions of healing or anything in that. It's just an image for image's sake, for shock value. It's not easy to hear complexity when so much of what we're told is essentialized into one thing. So I'll use the example of domestic violence. When I used to work in an organization that dealt with domestic violence, I used to hear all the time from women who talked to me, and I don't know whether it's people's experience in this room, but one of the things that we deny often is that there is love, whether it's good love or bad love, but it's difficult to say that I'm going to leave a person that I have invested time in and that I can say that I love. Because we want to deny that women love their partners. Because there's violence there. And the complexity of our relationships and the difficulty of leaving or staying or figuring out what you want to do is kind of lost, because we can only think of one truth or one thing, one stereotype when it comes to those situations. So in the telling of a story, it's not easy to trust an unseen viewer. It's not easy to hear your own story, and it's not easy to hear it in your own voice. So many digital storytellers who hear their voices for the first time are like, God, I hate the sound of it. I don't sound like that. I sound weird. Why have I got that accent? Why can't I sound, I don't know, a CNN newsreader? I don't know. I don't know what you're hearing in our heads, right? So It's not easy to let go of an experience that you hold dear, even if it's a painful one. That experience is part of you, and sometimes in telling it feels like you're letting it go, and that's an incredibly hard experience. It's not easy to fall into the trap of comforting other people through your storytelling. So you kind of anticipate that people will be upset if I say this. So I'm just going to say it in a different way, so as not to offend or scare or whatever the person that I'm imagining I'm speaking to, because often we have a person in mind when we're telling our story. And then there's spaces in between the teller and the witness that kind of mediate how you hear someone's story, whether it's your mood on the day or your cultural belief or your religious belief. There are things in between you that might stop you from listening carefully or might interpret what a person is saying in a certain way. There's a poem, and I like the last line, or the last stanza that says, she badly wants, not a fresh lover, strong man, or clown, but a new language in which to hold her own. And the thing is that every storyteller finds her voice, her language, her way of speaking when we do a digital story process. And that is an incredibly valuable gift to take through to whatever story you want to tell next. And I wanted to also bring the complexity in here with Tsina Mhlophe's history is a heavy matter. It's a strange animal with multiple heads, colors too many to ever count. The creature's unique colors have a way of awakening the most indescribable pride, but others bring back such sad memories, the very worst memories, of events that left our ancestors perplexed and speechless. So I hope that stories tell a more complex story, that they allow us also to find something that reaches us from a complex story. Because when you tell a simple story, there's one message, there's one way of entering it for the viewer. But if you tell a little bit more complex, a little bit more of how you really experience something, you give others a better entry to engage with you. So we're going to watch stories of the show now.
So I just wanted to add a bit to what Sally said, because Sally and I have worked together in many digital storytelling workshops. And the first, Sally in fact was my trainer at the first workshop, which was this, I have listened, I have heard. And I think I've learned many things over the years, but the one thing I have learned is that in order to be a trainer or facilitator in this methodology, you have to make your own story. You have to know what it's like to tell your story. And I think that's very important in terms of how we use digital storytelling, because there are many ways of offering the training. But as feminist activists, we need to know what it's like to walk in someone else's shoes, to live inside someone else's skin. And I think, for me, doing that was really important. And Sally is an awesome trainer. And I told a story. I didn't know what story to tell. And often people who are making stories don't know what story to tell because we have so many to tell. And it was amazing how that process of finding what story I wanted to tell was guided and facilitated. And the story I told was exactly the one I wanted to tell. So often in the process of these workshops, you find things inside of yourself that you have never known how to name. And I think that's often very important in digital storytelling workshops, that process is facilitated very carefully and with great respect, and knowing that everybody has different stories to tell. So the one that I told to this day still means a lot to me and kind of makes my heart feel big. So I think that is quite important. Another thing that we find is the images. Often we get very caught up in telling the stories and forget the images we're using could be compromising someone else. Maybe we are, you know, there's certain people that shouldn't see the story. So you've got to be quite careful about how you construct your story and what images you use. I think also, I'm going to say a little bit about the facilitating of the story circle itself. The way the digital storytelling workshop works is you have, usually we have a theme. So the reason why we wanted to do digital stories was to encourage women activists to use the technology, to say, actually, this technology you can control. It's not this complicated kind and to use the technologies to tell a story, the technology becomes easy because there's a point in of why you're using the technology. So you think of a story, bring a group together, and then you have what's called story circle, which I think is really powerful because we found that that can build a community of women that understand, and men who understand each other, and often learn more things about themselves and about the other. I mean, there are many other things that we could talk about, but I think the one line that I really like, Sally's really a poet, so I don't think I should do one, but the one line which I really like, which is, listen deeply, tell stories. When we make these stories, we're listening very deeply. So the one that we didn't know which stories to show you, but we decided to show one story, which I actually showed to the students yesterday. It's a Karen story, because made at a workshop in 2007, where we got together a group of women's rights activists who were documenters from around Africa. And we said to them, tell the story about you as witness to various forms of violence. Women came together, and every single one of them told their own story of violence, which in and of itself was interesting. We had a story circle which was incredibly powerful, and some of the one story which I think was quite powerful, which we probably can't show, is a woman, Robin, who came from Canada to work in Uganda. She said, I don't have a story to tell. And working with her, and listening to what she had witnessed, we said to her, tell the story of how you felt as an outsider being in a refugee camp and having to deal with young girls who had been abused. And the story was, in the end, very powerful, because she had found something inside of herself, and she told a story which was about her, but it was also about someone else. Just an experience that happened when we were running a workshop in Pakistan. You're in this story circle, you're listening to these stories which are not necessarily stories that you can understand, but you can relate to them, because people are telling stories that are meaningful to themselves. And the story circle can be very heavy, and I remember one incident where a woman was telling the story about a university professor who had abused her and how powerless she was in that situation. And we were listening and being very empathic, and then she got to the point where she went into his room after leaving university and coming back, and she said, I don't know what happened, but I just picked up his knife and I chopped off his fingers. And we heard the story, and we didn't quite know how to respond to that, because it was her story, it was her story of revenge, but it was a very complicated process in relation to how to respond to that. But it was her story, and it was how she was telling what she was telling. So there is sometimes some humor in stories. Okay, so we'll show Karen's story, and then maybe if you want to ask anything about techniques or about the story itself once you've watched it. This was made in 2007.
Break the chain. It was bright. The sun was high up. I was outside, cleaning up as I always did. He came in. He wanted some money from her. He called her. She asked him to wait. He called her again. He was never a patient man. She couldn't come. She was in the ladies' room. He was furious. I was scared. I said a silent prayer, praying that my fears may not come true. When she finally came, he was cursing. He grabbed her, pulling her blouse, her pink blouse. All her buttons came off. He hit her. I cried. Nobody heard me. It was as if a spirit was in control. He pulled her, pushing her against the wall. She screamed. I cried out loud. Nobody heard me. He picked a stick and hit her again and again. Screams. Blood-curdling screams. The pain, like a knife turning slowly inside one's heart. The workers were watching. Everyone was watching. Watching. But none could help her. His strength was too much for her. I had to do something. I just had to do something. I had to. I walked into the house and slammed the door so hard. Everything stopped. He stopped. She took off. Did he have to? Beat her up again and again? Beat her as I watched? Did he care how I felt? How we felt and still feel? Did he have a care? I'm heavy laden. The pains and anguish of that day have stuck with me always. I wish to break the chains, if only for my little girl. She is just 6 months old, with a smile to die for. I want a different world for her, for all the women in the world. Break the chains.
They saw me on tape 5 that I'm a lesbian. One of them bent my arm with a cigarette. They kicked me and started raping me one after the other. So said Zodwa when I interviewed her for the Gala Oral History Project. I begged them to let my girlfriend go and rape me alone. But they wouldn't listen. They raped both of us at the same time in front of each other. Mandy told me when I interviewed her. Teresa told me I couldn't swallow my saliva for a week after I was made to suck a hobo's cock. I later decided to leave Joburg, and I don't intend to come back. After listening to such stories, it becomes difficult for me to be a professional. Just take the story and end it there. I always feel a need to support them in any way possible. We then develop friendships. And when time comes for them to die, I just die with them. I realize it can happen to me, cause I'm no different from them. I don't need to be anywhere or do anything to experience violence. Mere existence is just enough. I'm angry because my actions and movements are limited. I live in fear of being raped and possibly be infected with HIV, or worse, being murdered just for being a lesbian. I've got 3 locks on my doors. I need one more to protect my heart from all this pain. Locks, locks, I hate them. I feel imprisoned in a free country.
know, these the stories are sometimes very difficult to watch, so maybe just have a kind of breather. And if there are any questions, Wussy made the story and she dedicated it to this one. So if